There goes the first official episode of the Shooting USA podcast. This one should be fun. I got Todd Jarrett lined up in about 15 minutes, and the boss man, the big voice, Jim Scouten, running around the office today. So we're going to try to pull him in here and get some comments from him on what he's been doing lately. So this podcast, the episode you're listening to now, marks number one, the official actual first episode of the Shooting USA podcast, which has been approved by iTunes, so you can download it into the iTunes podcast app, or you can listen to it off of Podbean. That's our hosting site. So we want your input on what we should be talking about, who we should be talking to, and so on. And you can reach us to give us that input through all of our Facebook pages, the Shooting USA Facebook page for the show, or my page, John Scouten, Mike Irvine for Impossible Shot Stuff, Jim Scouten, of course, or email through shootingusa.com. All of those are good ways to get in touch with us and give us your feedback. Tell us what you think. So anyway, like I said, Todd Jarrett in about 15 minutes, and then the big voice. We'll see if we can get him in here in between phone calls and other business that he's paying attention to today. First thing, let's talk about, just back from the USPSA Handgun Nationals. We were there for the first half, for production and limited and revolver, which, there are some interesting developments there. This is the last time the Handgun Nationals, for at least the foreseeable future, is going to be held at the Desert Sportsman's Team Ranges in Las Vegas. I got that straight from, your new USPSA president, Phil Strader, and, he's going to take the Revolver Nationals and separate it into its own match that will accompany, not overlap, but accompany the Single Stack Nationals in Barrie, Illinois, which I think is very interesting. Round count issues, setting stages, all of that's going to evolve, and I think it should make for a very, very interesting match. In addition to that, the Handgun Nationals are going to be in Utah at a range that I've never been to, but I'm told is very, very beautiful. What's interesting about that is I'm getting conflicting reports about how best to get there and how long it actually takes. The information I'm getting is that if you're traveling to this particular range, you should fly into Las Vegas and drive from there. Some people are telling me it's 3 hours. Phil's telling me it's an hour and a half. Having never done it, I don't really know, so I can't really speak to it, but it'll be an interesting adventure, that's for sure. And if the scenery is like it's said to be, I might make some beautiful scoreboard shots and other scenics like that, which we like. It's always fun. One place that really, really stands up to that is the Morro Bay area, the California coast. You see shots in just about every episode of Shooting USA that we've created over the years visiting Morro Bay and the Pacific Coast there. So fantastic, fantastic stuff. Getting geared up a week from yesterday, so we'll be heading down actually on Halloween for the Steel Challenge, the first one ever in Frostproof, which is interesting, and looking forward to that. The what's interesting also there is that some of the West Coast regulars have not yet signed up. So it'll be interesting to see who actually makes the journey, who stays true to the World Speed Shooting Championship, and who doesn't. Because from what I understand, they're going to continue steel shooting in Piru, but the match, the big match, the World Championship, will now be shot in Florida. So that will be part of the story for sure. Who's here, who's not, and why. So there is a strong steel shooting community in Florida. A lot of those people support the Steel National in Titusville, and that match is always a fantastic match. So there may be some overlap. There may be a new core group of regulars. It'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to it very much. And it's always a good time, you know, down there. We've got a few of the places figured out, having been there a couple of years in a row for Pro-Am, a couple of the restaurants and things like that down there. There's a steakhouse called Manny's that, funny enough, It was recommended to me by none other than Manny Bragg, and that place is fantastic. It's one of those things you figure out on the road. You figure out what works, and you go with what you know going forward. We've got a whole list of chain restaurants that are on our go with what you know list, but when we find places like that that are unique and local to the area, it's fantastic. Very similar to Dixie Crossroads when you go to Titusville, the rock shrimp there. You can't get that anywhere else, and it's something special if you've never had it. They're like little mini lobsters, and they are absolutely succulent and delicious. So that's more than enough about places we like to eat on the road. The man, you people in Titusville are lucky though. You got Dixie Crossroads every day. I would be fat if I lived there. Anyway, we're about a minute out from Todd Jarrett joining us on the podcast. So it'll be interesting to get his take. He had a pretty good finish at this year's Handgun Nationals. He did well in the open division, and it'll be fun to hear what he has to say about all of that. And I'm pretty sure he's wound down at this point, apart from maybe Steel Challenge. We'll ask him if he's going there. So let's go ahead and dial him up while we're sitting here talking about it. We'll be making it happen. Todd has also become, he's one of the newest shooters involved in Impossible Shots, and he's doing some pretty spectacular stuff there. So here goes the ringtone. Should be hearing Todd. So hopefully he'll answer. That'd be a good thing for the show. We'll see how this works out.
Hey, Big John.
There he is, man. Todd, I got you going on the podcast. How's everything?
I'm doing great, man. Well, when did you start this podcast? Is this brand new?
This is new, baby. You're actually my first official shooting sports guest on the first official episode. We did a shakedown episode earlier in the week when we got the gear, but now we've got the thing actually happening. We're approved by iTunes. You can download this thing and wear it out, man. So basically, what it amounts to is it's additional content and a way to interface with our audience and get feedback and react to things that are happening, plus talk to interesting people like you, learn more about what's going on in the world of shooting sports and in the shooting industry. So,
Oh, excellent.
really, what I'm wondering about, first of all, is your Handgun Nationals this year. I was telling the people just a moment ago that we were out for limited production and revolver, and you shot limited.
I did, and I shot what I considered fairly poorly. But it was one of those matches where, if you look at the top 15 guys that shot, everybody made so many mistakes, it was unbelievable, and anybody in the top 10 could have won the thing. It was a well-run match. The guys did a great job setting it up, putting that thing on the ground. But for some reason, I just got in this, Casey Casebio, JJ, JoJo Filipino mode for some reason. And I threw a bunch of misses and flipped a bunch of no-shoots. And I didn't think I would even make the top 16. And when I found out that everybody was shooting as bad as I was, I finished ninth. And still shot 95%, of the overall winner, but it was pretty disappointing. I'd like to start over again and do it and try it one more time. So I knew I would do better.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the story always, isn't it? There's always one you'd like to have back, it seems like.
Oh, yeah, only about 11 or 12 over the years, over the 60 some odd nationals I've have watched, have shot over the years, and yeah, I've been second more times and, more times I can count now in top three anyway. So, I can go back all the way back into the 80s when I started the game. Matter of fact, my 30th anniversary will be in March of 2013.
That's pretty incredible.
I've been shooting 30 years, so I feel pretty good that I can still at my young youth, I consider that I can still out there and hang out there with some of the younger shooters are coming along, and we got some fabulous shooters that are coming along, and they're going to be around for years to come. And we got some great talent in the U.S. And I think in 2014, when the new World Shoot comes to the U.S., I think we will be dominating in so many divisions in that time.
Yeah, well, good news, man. Now you stayed around and you shot the back-to-back nationals. Look at Jim Scouten just rolled in. You can grab that headset if you want. I'll bring you up on Channel 3. I'm talking to Todd Jarrett right now.
Well, the Open Nationals, which was the second one where they considered back-to-back, I had not shot an open gun since the World Championship in Greece last year, and I had decided that I called Phil Schrader up, and I went, Phil, I think I'm going to change out from limited 10, and I'm going to blast a little open because I enjoy shooting open. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's the, you know, it's the IndyCar racing of, in the action shooting world, and so knowing that there's so many talented guys in that group there, that's amazing. And I was going like, well, if I just go in there and just hit the targets and let them chase each other for a while and let my experience try to go in there and try to, you know, see what I can do to hang loose in there. And Shane Coley, who is a new national champion, he's an AMU guy, has phenomenal talent.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that much talent. Believe it or not, in many, many years, and I've got to see Shane come up through the ranks here in the last few years, and you know, now he's gotten to be a seasoned veteran on the circuit, and the guy is really, really good, and I, you know, he's amazing to watch. You know, I mean, along with, you know, several other of the top U.S. guys, you know, you got Max Michelle, and Max didn't have a good match, and you know Chris Tilley, who I shoot with often in this area, and Casey and JJ Ricaza, and these guys are just—they're really super talented, and with the open gun, and it's amazing what you can do with a, you know, a red dot gun.
Hey, Todd Jarrett, Jim Scouten joining in.
Jim Scouten.
Yes, believe it or not. So,
what's up, Jim? How you doing, buddy?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm just back from USAMU. Was down there meeting a new commander, the new sergeant major, and getting connected up. We've got another series of pro tips underway, and Coley's going to be part of that for sure.
He'll probably put on a great show for you because he's he's got a great family, and you know, AMU has, you know, it's turned out some phenomenal shooters over the years. They had, you know, we can go back to the early 90s when Merle Eddington was the very first AMU national champion in 94. And then, of course, we have Max and Max Michelle had come out of there. Travis Tomasi came out of AMU. Julie Glob, who, you know, was also came out of AMU. And now we got Shane, we got Kate, some of the hot rocks are coming out there, so it's amazing.
Yeah, those guys appreciate it no matter what team they're on. We were working yesterday with a shotgun team. Those guys appreciate it. You know, they get paid, they get benefits, and they get all the ammo they can shoot, and that's their job. And knowing you, it's not easy to be round enough ammo to get the practice in that you need. But let me ask you a question: if you're going to shoot open, is your experience going to make a difference as you work out a strategy on any one of those stages? Is that where the younger guys are going to potentially get caught up short? They may be quick, they may be fast, but they're not going to see it quite as well as you do?
No, I think that, you know, what helps me in is the harder matches. I mean, they, you know, that the new, I consider, you know, the Y competitors, which are the 20 something guys out there where I'm almost 5-0 now. They love to shoot the close stuff and they're very, very good at it. The footwork has become, you know, very, very, very important. You know, being able to move through the courses to be able to get through as quickly as possible, but their speed in which they shoot is, you know, they're probably a couple of percent faster than I am, and I have to rely on, you know, certain types of matches where accuracy plays more of a role and where their speed, they don't, you know, maybe not, they don't know how to, you know, speed up and slow down in some ways.
Not just a hoser match. So the classic Taron Butler thing, that if it's close and it's fast, it'll sound like a machine gun, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's, you know, we had, you know, machine gun Taron. Is, of course, the guy's crazy with a gun, but he's pretty phenomenal. He's learned how to read the sights after all these years. So for me, the harder the shots are, I enjoy shooting the speed shoots, the stuff that, because I'm very good, I guess still got my hand speed, in which, you know, makes it, you know, convenient for, me to be able to be competitive in that area. When it comes to longer field courses, the guys are quicker on their feet. I seem to be a little bit more more deliberate, and you know, I understand where the disaster factor is, and you know, in some cases they don't, you know, they don't read disaster as much as I do. So I'm a little bit more cautious in those areas.
Speaking of disaster, I got to point out, I don't know if you saw it, but we just put your first Todd Jarrett Impossible Shot show on the air this week. And I don't know what you're hearing about it, but I particularly like that part where you start talking to yourself about how you're going to make that shot. So, no, great performance. We enjoyed it. We've gotten some strong feedback on it already.
Well, Irvine and I, when we did that show, when we filmed that here back in the summer, I had a, you know, I was trying to figure out something to do. And, you know, when I called Mike and said, hey, let's, you know, I'm a big fan of Annie Oakley, and let's see what we can do. Wrap something around that, and so I was trying to find something a little bit unique and different. And of course, shooting a diamond, shooting a balloon was is difficult enough as it is by using a handgun, which I don't know if anybody's ever used a handgun in the Annie Oakley shot before. And so the bank shot, by far, even the, you know, the show last night, when you see me do that, and it looks like it's oh, that's just kind of banking that bullet there. It's 10 times harder than what I had done with the dime or the balloon shot. The reason why is because if you're too close with the shot, the bullet comes apart and breaks, and then you're cheating, and then the actual bullet, you know, fragment, you know, breaks the balloon, so I had to keep the bullet in place. So one thing that we didn't have in the show that people may not have seen is that when I shot the last shot, which was at 22 yards away and banked the shot off of it, the bullet actually hit the 2x4 dead center of the balloon, and which was, you know, it was pretty much a phenomenal shot. And, you know, that's, and I had not done that even in practice. And you know, I practiced several thousand rounds trying to make that shot happen, and I felt pretty confident I could do it. But if you move literally a quarter of an inch one way or the other, that bullet can go 2 feet in any direction. So it was
Yeah, the way to think about it, and I don't know if the audience thinks about it or just enjoys it as it's happening, but it's like very, very, very high-speed billiards. And, you know, if you are going to – if that cue ball is just a little bit off, the target ball is not going in the pocket, and the same thing applies here. But this is billiards at 1,250 feet per second, so a little different deal.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, my phone is, emails and Facebook have been ringing. I think I got about 14 messages last night from the first show in the rerun. I looked at it this morning, I had about 19 new messages, and I had gotten a bunch of emails from everybody, and I've gotten a lot of humorous texts over the day and after the show last night. So, hopefully for you guys, I did my job for you, and hopefully you guys got some good ratings out there. So,
oh, as always, it was absolutely fantastic. And if you remember, I had an opportunity to be out there while production was ongoing, and Irvine still raves to this day about your level of preparedness. And when we started attempting to create these shots, they're supposed to be hard, and he's thinking to himself, his warm-up shot is the impossible shot. What's he going to do next, this guy? So that leads me to the question, what are you going to do next?
Well, I have a couple of things in the works that I'm playing around with, and I'm looking to do – well, there's several things. I mean, I think we cut another show out there with some, you know, some high-speed shooting out there that we did, and I'm not sure when that'll air sometime, you know, this year. But I have a couple more things in the works.
Now,
that I think could be interesting.
Todd, don't be talking about them because, you know, Julie's going to snap up any idea she hears and try to get down here first. Although,
hear me not, you know,
yeah.
I'm not telling you everything. I'm just telling you that I've got some neat things that I'm interested in doing. So
that's
I'm
all we need to know.
It'll be there when it's on tape. Absolutely. Hey, I'm turn this back over to John. Get out of here. I got to get prepared to head up to Upper Sandusky, Ohio, in the morning. Got to spend some time with our friends at Ithaca and do a little shotgun business. And
make sure you're back home to vote.
Oh, yeah. No. We it's filed. It's done. I took my lovely wife to lunch. We did early voting. And yes, here in Tennessee, I had to show them my driver's license to prove it was really me. Not somebody voting me dead.
I don't have a problem with that.
Right. So, Todd, always a pleasure. Good to jump in on this one and get a chance to chat with you.
Absolutely, Jim. Take care, buddy. I'll
see
you.
Hey, that was fun. I got my first call in, and I got the first presence of the Golden Voice, the Big Pipes. The voice came in and got on the podcast, man, episode one. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, John, you're following your father's footsteps here. You've been doing a fabulous job, you know, with Shooting USA. You know, and I've known you for a long time. Man, you're a great dude, and I enjoy working with you and your whole crew, man. You got a great crew working there. And, of course, Irvine, he's kind of new to Impossible Shots. But, I got some tapes in, and I looked at them. You guys sent to me, and, yeah, you guys' production doing great. I'm excited for your company, and I'm looking forward to working with you a lot more in the future.
You bet, man. I think it's going good. One last question. Steel Challenge. We're heading down Wednesday. What's your deal? Are you gonna head down to Frostproof, or what's your plan?
Well, the plan is for me to head out on Sunday to head down there. I am waiting around for that little bitty hurricane down in the Caribbean, because I only live about 60 miles from the coast, and I seem to get hit with a lot of hurricane damage around here. So I am waiting on Sandy to see what she's going to do. And I think, I actually have, make sure that, my parents are in good shape here, and make sure that my place is going to be okay. But I seem to get hit with a lot of hurricanes and been nailed over the years. So I'm holding off on that, and I'm actually heading to the range here in about 2 hours to go bust about 1,000 rounds of Steel Challenge, see if I can get to knock the rust off my gun, and see how I can do for some of those impossible speed runs that we're going to do at the challenge, which is phenomenal. So I'm glad you guys are coming, because it's the most exciting of all the action shooting sports that's ever been created, and it's unbelievable to watch some of these guys and see what they can do on five pieces of steel.
Oh yeah, I'm fully pumped for this one, and I think it's going to be an interesting take that it'll be a very different match from the one that has always been in Piru. Just in terms of the climate and the backdrop behind the targets and the fact that it's a completely flat range, what are your thoughts there?
Well, I've shot down at Universal Shooting Academy many times at Frank Garcia's place, and Frank and him put on a great show. Manny Bragg, Shannon, those guys will put on a good show. I don't think there's going to be any difference. I think the speeds will be quicker in Florida than it would be in California, because the backgrounds in California, it's a really light background, almost a sandy color, and of course the targets are white. So being then on the East Coast, there's a little bit more greenery, a little more darker background, so you can acquire the targets a little quicker. So I think the speeds are going to be faster. I think you will see some new world records broke there for sure this year, and that's my prediction anyway.
That's what I want to hear, man. That's what I'm looking forward to. In terms of equipment, are you bringing anything new, or are you sticking with stuff that's tried and true?
Well, I'm shooting a gun that I shot in 1996 that I won the world championship with, and I converted that over to my Steel Challenge gun about 13 years ago. So I think this is my 13th year of coming to a Steel Challenge. And I still have what I call my Slayer II gun built by my good friend Al Zetta, who built me a 38 Super 6-inch slide for my limited division. Mm-hmm. And I got an STI Marvel conversion kit that I'll be using for the 22 event.
There you go. So Steel Master, you're going all the way. We're going through all three guns, and it'll be a full court press from TJ.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys down there, and hopefully I can put together some good runs and maybe win a few stages, and if the sun sets correctly, who knows? I might pull out a win for you guys.
I like the sound of it. Well, all right, buddy, I'm going to let you get at it. It's coming up on 11, so coming up on noon your time, about lunchtime.
About lunchtime, yeah, absolutely. Time for a little lunch, and throw some guns in the truck and head to the range and bust some bullets.
There you go, the life and times of a pro shooter. Todd, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate it. I hope you'll come back and be on the podcast again.
Absolutely. Thanks for letting me be there first. And, John, you guys be good and safe travels, man.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Got it. Go vote.
Ah, you bet. Vote. Well, there you go. The first official call-in pro shooter guest on the Shooting USA podcast, Todd Jarrett. Very cool. Looking forward to seeing Todd down at the Steel Challenge. And, of course, you can see some of the things that we were talking about there, impossible shots, performances from Todd. Those are airing throughout the next month or so, plus reruns. Tune in, catch impossible shots, catch Shooting USA. You can see all this action. And we're looking for your feedback. Who do you want us to be talking to? What do you want us to be talking about? Those kind of things are important. That's how this becomes a two-way conversation. This is how we interact with the audience, and the audience interacts with us. That's what we want to do. That's the goal of this podcast. So email through shootingusa.com or through the Facebook pages, the Jim Scouten Shooting USA show page, or my Facebook page, John Scouten, or Mike Irvine's Facebook page. All of those are the ways to get in touch with us and let us know what you want to hear, what you want us to be talking about. One thing I'm looking forward to when we get down to Universal Shooting Academy is the fact that the Universal Shooting Academy Pro Shop is an official retailer for the Captains of Crush grip strength training devices. And I've just in the last about 6 weeks started really working on and taking a taking an active approach to developing my grip strength to benefit everything from, obviously, from my shooting, but also to any athletic endeavor, any of the weightlifting, pull-ups, and those things. It all really hinges on grip strength, and it all benefits if your grip strength is up. And so I started with Heavy Grips is a brand name, and I got a Heavy Grips 100 and started with that, and have since acquired a Heavy Grips 150 and a Heavy Grips 200. And when I was at the IDPA Nationals, I was talking with Bob Vogel, who has a famously strong grip. And I think the first time I met Bob, I wasn't prepared for it. I had no understanding of what he was about, and he laid the serious crusher handshake on me. You know, and I had told, you know, first I asked him, hey, I'm sure that you are, but I want to be sure. Are you into grip strength training? And, you know, that drew a laugh from a couple of the people who were hanging around, but Bob was very nice about it. And, of course, yes, he is. And so I asked some of his advice. And the key thing that Bob turned me on to is the fact that some hand grip trainers, some gripping devices are different from others, and they rate their weights differently. But the gold standard is the Captains of Crush, and that's what he has. And he had three of them in his range bag. And the Captains of Crush model number one basically is the next step up from the Heavy Grips 200, which I'm able to close the 200 one or two times unset if my hand is fresh. I have to set it a little harder, you know, force the thing into my palm a little harder if I've been working the 150 and building the strength. But the thing about it is the strength gains have gone up incrementally in the last 6 weeks. And that's one of those things you have to watch out for in grip strength training, is it's very easy to overtrain, and then you can cause yourself some serious hand problems. But what I'm looking forward to at the Universal Shooting Academy is the fact that the Pro Shop there is an official retailer of the Captains of Crush hand grippers. And so I'll be buying my model number one, which is the next step up from the Heavy Grips 200, and taking it from there. Of course, in Bob's range bag, he's got a Heavy Grips number two and a Heavy Grips number three, which, amazingly enough, he's able to close. He calls, you know, he qualifies it by saying, well, I have to take a very deep set to close this thing. But he can do it. I've seen him do it with my own eye. Pretty impressive stuff. Anyway, looking forward to that. And, of course, looking forward to Manny's restaurant. And then there's also a Italian restaurant that we hit up there. And look at me, it's almost lunchtime, so here I am talking about food again. Well, here's something that I think will be interesting. This is a recording of a conversation that I had with Scott McGregor and Bruce Pyatt on the first day of the Fallen Brethren 3-Gun. It was actually the day before the Fallen Brethren started. We were scouting ranges. Bruce helped me put a better hard zero on my rifle. And so the rest of the crew had already gone back to the hotel. Obviously, they don't want to walk around and scout ranges. They'll see plenty of it through the cameras. But because I was shooting this whole match, I wanted as much intel as I could get. And, who better to get it from than Bruce Pyatt. And so anyway, on our way out back to Decatur from the Spartan Tactical Ranges, it's about a 25-minute car ride. And that's when I brought up a picture that was taken of Scott and a guy, Chris Fleming, that we all know and has been on the show a number of times. And Chris Fleming is a dual amputee below the knee. And he's dealing with his injuries very well, and he uses shooting as one of his methods of therapy. But in this particular picture that was captured, Scott is, or it looks like, Scott has dumped Chris out of his wheelchair. And so I wanted some clarification, so I'm going to go ahead and roll the sound from that interview.
Chris is there. Got to talk up a little bit.
Oh, we're really doing it?
Turn that off.
See, Chris is there. Everybody's on the stage.
Everybody's on the stage, and Chris is there, and I'm pushing him around his wheelchair because I don't want his bloody stump. I don't want his stumps getting all bloody, riding around.
Well, why is he not wearing his legs? That's what I need.
He did have his legs on, but, he gets sore, and his legs get kind of messed up, as he walks around on those prosthetics. So I'm pushing him around his wheelchair up and down the hill, and I push him to a spot where he's going to shoot, and he'll stand up and kind of get his bearings and kind of plan, do his walkthrough, so to speak, right? So I'm pushing him up the hill, and we hit a little stump, and the wheelchair stops, and he's fine, but he's like, hey, take it easy. And I said, yeah, whatever. So I'll be quiet. I'm pushing you up the hill.
Right.
So we start, we go down for his next walkthrough, and we come back up, and we hit the same little stump again by accident, and it just stops the wheelchair. And this guy looks around to see who's watching, and then propels himself out of the wheelchair onto the ground.
And so that's why you were smiling in the picture.
And there I am. There I am, holding the wheelchair with this guy with no legs flailing around.
Combat wounded veteran, no legs.
Yeah.
On the ground.
On the ground. On the ground. On his own. Mm-hmm. On his own. He propelled himself, literally, out of the wheelchair.
Making enough commotion that everybody would notice.
Yeah, yeah.
So much so that a photo was actually taken.
That photo was taken. And, and so I am the guy on Facebook who dumped the guy with no legs out of his wheelchair.
Well, that helps us all understand a little better.
Yeah, yeah, I hope so.
Well, it does hurt falling out of a chair. I can completely understand his feelings.
Yeah, you should have seen how hard he propelled himself out of it. It was amazing.
Mostly an upper body move.
It was surprisingly athletic, really. Yeah, definitely upper body strength. He's got that going for him. And so I stood there and looked at him and just said, okay, game on.
Okay, it starts now.
Game on. Yeah. So, yeah, there's my experience. That's the whole reason behind the picture. And the funniest part to me was Jerry looking at me and looking at Chris on the ground. I don't know that he saw Chris propel himself out of the chair. Jerry looks at it and just looked at me and said, man, that's cold, Scott.
Yeah.
That's cold.
Jerry's very matter of fact.
He is.
I mean, he takes everything pretty much on face value.
Yeah. So, what do you do?
At Industry Masters this year at Rock Castle in beautiful Park City, Kentucky, I had the opportunity to sit with Chris at one point while he was airing out his nubs.
Yes.
And we got into a discussion about whether or not the nubs actually cause the cups on his leg, on his prosthetic legs, to have an odor. And I offered my watch band as kind of a starting point, as a benchmark for odor. And I said, Chris, smell my watch band. Tell me if your cups on your legs smell anything like this. He wasn't interested in smelling the watch band.
But he made you smell the cups?
But I went ahead and smelled the cups just because I wanted to report to the people. The watch band smells a heck of a lot worse.
Does it?
Yeah. And
than the nubs?
It's due to the fact that his nubs are actually covered by some heavy neoprene compression garments before they go into the cups. But there's a photo of that particular incident also.
So does the sweat make them smell like feet?
I don't know. I didn't. Now, I'll say this. I did not smell the compression garments. That you know, he said, well, you really want to smell it, you should smell these. Yeah. And I said, no, I really don't.
I was kind of wishing Chris was here for this weekend because I had a couple times where my glasses kind of got smudged up a little bit. And those socks he puts on his nubs before he puts those legs on.
Right.
They're actually great for cleaning glasses. They're very soft.
Yeah, well, they would be.
Yeah. Yeah. And then again, the other thing was my favorite thing at the Pro-Am, now that you mention it, was, you know, on Saturday night when Joe DeBergelis and the NRA and Life and Duty honored Chris, you know, as somebody who served his country and is, you know, dealing with the ramifications of that and things. And then they also honored all those other folks, including James Gill from the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they honor James first, and there's James, you know, with his one prosthetic leg, and he's got that one eye with the black eye that he puts in, you know.
Right.
And, you know, and he's shooting very well, and he gets around very well. You know, he's worked very hard at coming back from his injuries and things. And he, Joe called Gil's name, and he ran right up there and looked great. You know, you'd never know that he had these issues that he's had to overcome. And I was sitting there with Chris, who was sitting in the Hava tracked wheelchair, and Chris said, look at that guy. You know, he's, you know, he looks great. You can't even hardly tell he was injured, you know. And I said, that's when I looked at him, and I said, yeah, what's wrong with you? I said, he can run around fine on those things. Why, you gotta quit being so lazy, you know. But,
well,
you know, obviously joking, but Chris is an excellent shooter. He shoots very well, and he, I think as he becomes more accustomed to those prosthetics, that he's going to do very well and have some great finishes.
Yeah, well, he gives it as good as he gets it, that's for sure. And the beauty of our family, if you will, of shooters is we all will treat each other as though that's not something that makes him different.
Yeah.
That's just another something we can give him some ribbing about. And I think that helps these guys, and especially in Chris's case, it helps him to deal with his injuries, move forward, move past it.
Definitely. Yeah, these guys, you know, they don't want to be treated special. Although I think all of us want to, you know, we all appreciate what they've done and you know, where they've gone to help our causes, you know, the things that they've sacrificed. But, you know, you get a guy like Chris, guys like James, and they come back, they just want to be one of the guys. So that's it.
And that's it. Interesting stuff, man. And that proves another thing that I wasn't really sure about before this, and that is you can record stuff in your voice memos and play them back into the mixer and make them part of the podcast. So checked with Scott before I played that, and he gave me his blessing, and I'm sure at some point, it'll make its way in front of Chris Fleming. It'll be interesting to get his take on it. I'm going to make Scott McGregor a regular on the podcast, so we'll be calling him, getting his take on everything that's going on in the world of shooting. Scott does a lot of multi-gun shooting and has really started to excel. Tac Optics shooter, doing very well. Posted a couple of top 10 finishes against some of the best guys in the country. And that's remarkable stuff. So be looking forward to hearing from him on a regular basis on the podcast. Well, that's interesting. Walk you through it. Ladies and gentlemen, a completely unexpected turn of events. I believe his ears must have been burning when I was playing this earlier. Chris Fleming has called into the show. Chris, I've got you on the line.
Hey, what's going on?
That's awesome. I just played back a little bit of the interview I did with Scott McGregor at Fallen Brethren when he's talking about the now infamous picture on Facebook, and I'd love to get your take on that particular chain of events.
Well, everybody knows Scott as probably one of the nicest guys in the game, and everybody I talk to thinks he's this giant teddy bear, but I actually think I saw a different side of him that day. What he said is completely wrong. He kept forcing me to get in my wheelchair to go up and down this hill, and I told him that I was fine, and you know, finally I just, you know, agreed to it, and he was running up the hill, you know, probably at, you know, 10 mile an hour, and then he threw me out of the chair.
Oh.
And then he just laughed, and, you know, Diana's over there with her camera, and, you know, all I needed to do was get some help to get up, and, you know, everybody's just taking pictures instead.
You're definitely going to have to clear that up, because that's going to make people crazy. That's going to make people wild. Also, you know, in that bit of interview, I bring up the time at Industry Masters where we were sitting in the golf cart, and I offered my watch band as a benchmark for, you know, an odorous.
Oh, I can still smell it.
Well, you see, and my recollection of that, I think, in the interview with Scott and them was a little bit wrong, because I don't remember you actually smelling it, but to hear you tell the tale, you did actually get a nose full of that, and I've accompanied all of this information for the people with actual photos, so I think it's going to be an interesting deal to see how they react. But the real thing I want to talk to you about is ultimately you getting so heavily involved in all of these different shooting sports. Tell me how it's gone for you, especially in the three-gun arena.
Well, I was approached by DTMS very early in the season, and they said that they, you know, wanted to add me to their team, and, you know, I really didn't know how to respond to it. I watched it on TV. I watched the coverage you guys do, and I thought, you know, hey, I'll give it a shot. And turns out I'm not half bad at it, and I can go to rehab, and I can, you know, do stuff around the house and exercises, but nothing can compare to, you know, actually going out there and doing it, because the whole name of the game is positions, getting uncomfortable, and, you know, essentially getting out of your comfort zone. So it really is a good mixture, and, you know, when it comes down to it, I've met some of the best guys that you could possibly meet in the game, and that right there is worth all the pain, and, you know, the recovering afterwards, and, you know, being away from home, you know, on occasion, but you know, just absolute lifelong friends from just 1 year.
That's amazing how quick that, you know, relationships that are built on the range are, at least in my experience, are some of the strongest. I think it's fantastic. Now, are you planning to shoot Steel Challenge?
You know, I actually don't know what's going on for next year right now. We're getting ready to have a new addition to the family here in exactly 1 week tomorrow.
Whoa. Well, congratulations on that. Well, I didn't know about that. That's fantastic.
And, you know, so I need to be the dad. I need to be the husband first. And, you know, this is certainly not the first thing on my list, though it's up there. You know, but my wife, very understanding. She knows that this is good for me and, you know, good for, you know, me getting better and, you know, faster and moving better. But, you know, I'm going to try to do, you know, 6-8 matches and, you know, try to do some local stuff. And, you know, off topic a little bit, I had a buddy of mine from back in Southern Illinois call me, and he said, you know, I got a young man in a wheelchair, 14 years old, and I'm trying to get him to shoot skeet. So we can do 22 pistols just fine, but I want to see what he can do with the shotgun. And I just felt honored that he wanted my input on it. And, you know, even though I may not be the right guy from my travels, you know, I know Graham Hill, who's a wheelchair-bound NRA board of directors, and I know Trevor Bauckham, who's, you know, Smith & Wesson's finest. And, you know, I'm going to be able to help this kid get in touch with these guys and, you know, get them on the range.
No, that's fantastic. It was, well, I think to that end, how is your recovery? Because when we first met, going on a year ago now, you were pretty limited when it was time to get on the prosthetics, and, you know, there was some amount of time you could do and some amount that you couldn't, and it's a building process, a hardening process for the stumps and so on. So over the course of the year, how has that progressed for you?
I've really been able to see a transformation, and not only in the shooting ability, but the being able to maneuver. And I've actually had my prosthetics more geared towards shooting the game, because before they were very stiff and didn't have a lot of movement in the ankle area. But learning, you know, steep inclines, declines, rocky terrain, that, you know, I can adapt my system a little bit better to be a better competitor. And, you know, honestly, my goal is to do a match, not get DQ'd, which I'm sure is everybody's goal, and, you know, not fall down.
Yeah. And, you know, even though a simple fall is not devastating, if you ask guys like Travis Gibson, who does
he's a regular on
match,
it.
if I fall down, it could be pretty detrimental, but it's definitely getting easier, and that's probably the best way to put it. I'm learning what I can do and what I can't do, and the can't-dos are getting less and less every day.
Dude, it's fantastic. It's inspirational. Well, I'm excited to know that people are reaching out to you to help introduce other shooters with disabilities, and this thing is just going to continue to compound and grow exponentially moving forward. And I know it's an honor for me to know you, and it's thrilling for me to know that it's already starting to ramp up. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's exciting to be a part of, and you know, nothing but good stuff for next year. And my older son is going to be 4 next month, and you know, I there are a couple of folks out there that tour the country doing this stuff. You know, they're bringing their, you know, 8 and 10 and 12 year olds out there, and you know, I'm kind of ready for that. I'm kind of ready for this to be me and my boys out there, you know, doing the game together and, you know, enjoying it, and I can make them carry all my crap.
Well, you know what I mean, they got to earn their ride. Outstanding, Chris. I appreciate you participating. I'd love to talk to you again on the podcast.
Yeah, just give me a shout.
You bet, buddy. Awesome. Well, how much fun is that? Chris Fleming, apparently with his ears burning out there in the world, knowing that we're talking about him in the form of a recording, calls in and bam, now we got his side of the story. Anyway, I got one more surprise for this first edition of the Shooting USA podcast. We're going to call Max Michelle and find out what's going on with him in the world of fast open division shooting. I know he's preparing for an area USPSA match and more than likely preparing for the Steel Challenge. So let's see if we can get him.
Hello?
Max, it's John.
Hey, John, what's up, man?
Hey, buddy, I got you going on the podcast and just want to kind of see what's going on, check in and see if this is – see if this is something that we might be able to make a regular thing going forward.
Cool. Sounds good to me.
Awesome. I read that you're preparing for the, is it an area match?
It is, yeah, the Area 4. It's going to be Louisiana State / Area 4, so same match, but I guess a whole two different titles.
Right on. Right there in your own backyard, too.
It is, yeah. It's just a couple hours from my house, which is a nice change of pace.
That's pretty cool. So division there, you're going to run open, obviously?
Yeah, I'm going to shoot open, exactly.
What do you got in terms of hardware there? Anything different? Anything new?
No, everything's pretty much the same. You know, I'm one of those guys who like to run the same gear for several years just because it's been proven and tested. Anytime you start changing gear, to me, only bad things happen. Of course, it's a distinct advantage, then I'll look into it. But other than that, I usually stay with the same stuff. I mean, I really wanted to shoot single stack here this match at the Area 4. And the only reason why I didn't, the last minute I changed to open was just simply because there's just not enough time in the year, unfortunately. I just got back from the USPSA Nationals, and I had one practice day to get ready for the Louisiana State, so I just decided to keep with open because as soon as I get back from Louisiana State, or Area 4 rather, you know, then it's on to the Steel Challenge, and I have like 3 or 4 days to prepare for that. So it just made sense to stay with the open gun for now.
I got you. How did the gun perform for you at Nationals, and how did Nationals go?
The gun ran great. Everything was fine. You know, I had some issues leading up to the match before I left, as far as just my, you know, not anything mechanically wrong with the gun or the scope. It was just the mount itself. The mount screws were snapping off, and I wasn't aware of it until the day I left. So I was, you know, trying to find a local gunsmith in the area to help me get the mount off because it was Loctited on so well, I just couldn't get it off with the heat gun that I had. But finally got everything put back together and made it out to Vegas and checked my zero out there and, you know, got everything ready to rock and roll. So the gun ran just fine and just my performance wasn't very good. You know, the first 2 days I dug myself into quite a big hole. And the third day I made a great comeback. You know, I gained 50 to 80 points on most of the competitors on the last day, mm-hmm. Which is typically kind of my thing. You know, I usually always kind of, unfortunately, dig myself into a hole, and I usually find my way out of it. But just this time, I just ran out of stages, and you know, the guy shot better than I did.
Right.
Yeah.
This was an interesting combination of Nationals. At least we were there for the first half of it to see the Frenchman, to see Eric Raffel show up at a USPSA Nationals.
And yeah, exactly.
his game, especially in the production division, which he shot in the first half, was head and shoulders above. It was fantastic, and it's interesting to see him, having not seen him shooting for, I don't know, I think he was in the U.S. 6 or 7 years ago.
Right. Yeah, it's been a while since he's been in the U.S., and, I mean, he didn't surprise me in the least. You know, I talked to him back in October at the last World Shoot in Greece, and, you know, he and I were talking, and he was discussing the possibility of switching over to production division full-time, and you know, a lot of people... You know, people talk, you know, when guys shoot open guns, people talk, and we hear them, you know, hey, they can only shoot, you know, with a dot, they can't shoot without a compensator, things like that, but I knew what Eric was going to do once he shot production. He's a phenomenal talent, and the guy is just, you know, he works harder than anybody else, and he's just very, very good at what he does, and his mental game is second to none as well, so I knew when he was coming here that he was going to have a great chance of finishing well and probably winning by a large margin like he did. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm used to seeing that quite often, you know, with the open division from competing against him for so many years. But I think the reason why he came to the U.S. was he's promoting the new production line of guns that he has with Tang Folio, and that right. was a very important thing for them.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting, you know, with your affiliation with SIG, I didn't see any SIG shooters in the production match. And where do you see that on your horizon, or do you?
Yeah, you know, there's so many different divisions you can compete within, you know, and for me, I was trying, my first couple of years with SIG, I was really trying to compete in as many divisions as I possibly could. And then, you know, I shot a lot of limited 10 early on with our X5, which is my favorite gun, but as far as round capacity goes, you know, it is by far my favorite gun, and I can shoot it faster than any other 1911 I've ever had. But, you know, with round capacity, the guys are holding 22 rounds of 40. I'm only getting about 14 to 18 rounds, depending on, you know, magazine capacity as far as the extended base pad. So I stuck with limited 10 for a while, and I shot a little bit of production as well. And this year I was focusing on the open, and open's always been a passion of mine, as you know. You know,
sure.
I've been doing that for so many years. I just love running at the fastest possible limit that you can go to before you fall. You know, I just enjoy doing that. And then, of course, single stack. Single stack was a big deal this year with the 1911 Max coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to help promote and push that. But, you know, I personally did not attend the production nationals only because I was doing a dealer event up in Ohio with one of our larger dealers for 6 hours.
Yeah.
And that's very important, you know, to me and the company as well, to be there representing the, you know, the product line and getting to meet the customers firsthand. So that was a big deal as well. So, yeah, hopefully in the future, you know, we continue to push forward. I know at the moment the company doesn't have any interest, you know, any interest in having a large team. So that means, you know, I'm going to do the best I can to promote every product that we have. And it just becomes difficult, but I'm going to do my best to get it done.
Good. Sounds fantastic, man. And I know it's important to make sure that the company is selling, and that's the importance of a dealer event over, in some cases, a match. So. Next on the horizon after the area match is Steel Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And anything new there? Anything new in terms of preparation? What's your plan going there?
Man, I tell you, I can just take a deep breath at some point and just say the year's over because it just seems like everything just goes back to back to back to back. So right now, you know, honestly, I haven't prepared as much as I would have liked to have because of just other events leading up to this. You know, we just got out of the U.S. Nationals, and although the performance doesn't show it, I pretty much gave everything I had into that. You know, I put everything, all my eggs into that basket. I really wanted to, you know, kind of repeat as the national champ there. That didn't happen, unfortunately, so it's time to move on to the next one, and that'll be Steel Challenge, as you said. And, you know, for me, I don't like to shoot too much of Steel Challenge anyway because it is a very repetitive sport. And you can get into the mindset of shooting it with your eyes closed, and next thing you know, you're not paying attention to what you're supposed to be paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
So I typically like to do about 10 days of training, you know, 600 to 1,000 rounds a day. But unfortunately, I'm only going to get about half of that this year. I have, as I said, the Area 4 tomorrow, and I have some things going on over the weekend that I'll be teaching a course. So I'll, basically Monday through Friday is my training days, and one of those is my travel day to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's going to be tight for me this year. And so what I have to go off of this year is just experience and, you know, going out there trying to shoot about 5,000 rounds before the first shot's fired at the match and just go and give it my best and just be as mentally tough as I possibly can be.
There you go. What would you say, I mean, 5,000 rounds in preparation in a week or in less than a week in this case, That's a lot of shooting. I mean, that is a lot of shooting. Is that, what are the physical demands there? Are you going to have to recover from that?
Yeah, it is. You know, the older I get, you know, I always say that people laugh because I've always been the young guy in the sport. And every year I get older like everybody else. And now I'm 30, I'm getting ready to be 31. And when I'm shooting Steel Challenge specifically, because there's so many draws that you have to do, you know, when I say 5,000 rounds, that means I'm probably drawing the gun more than 1,000 times.
Right.
You know, within that time frame. And it's just like a pitcher pitching the ball too much. Eventually it's going to wear down on your body. So I would love to have day on, day off for the next month for Steel Challenge, but it's just not in the cards for me.
Right.
So my shoulders get more worn out than anything else, just from drawing the gun. But as far as my hands and those types of things, I have no issues there. But I'll just make sure I hit a hot tub or get a massage before the competition, and I'll be ready to go.
There you go. Outstanding. Now, you mentioned training. You got a course this weekend. How often are you doing that? And take me through that.
Yeah, you know, John, this year things have really, really picked up, you know, for the Training Academy. And it's a Max Michelle Training Academy, and I do it out of New Iberia, Louisiana, which is a private facility that my friend Blake Magez owns. Him and his family allow me to use the property, which is very nice. They have everything that I can need out there as far as a training course goes. And I typically teach, you know, anywhere, I roughly teach 6 to 8 courses out there a year, whether it be private lessons or full course lessons. And I do travel as well, you know, whether it be U.S. or overseas. So I take kind of the show on the road as well. And it's something I enjoy doing. It's a passion of mine. And my courses range from anything from what I call speed on steel. And basically what speed on steel is it's just a basic course. It kind of runs the guys through a 2-day course of fire, of basically stance, grip, draw, recoil management, transitions, things like that. And we do it all on steel targets. So, you know, you don't have to worry about being extremely precise. You just have to worry about picking up your speed and getting kind of the basics down with larger targets. And then we move on to the intermediate competitive pistol, which is probably my most popular course. And that's where I take the same, literally the same, you know, almost identical layout as far as the speed on steel, but we incorporate the paper targets and a little bit further distances, and we talk about the importance of now, you know, regaining those points back and that accuracy, and that there's a balance of speed and accuracy, and we discuss that quite a bit. And then, of course, the advanced competitive course, and that's where we do 2 days, you know, of an actual course. And the third day would be running them through a local competition or competition somewhere in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And that specific course is geared more toward people that's taken my courses previously and or, you know, masters, grandmasters at the highest level of their sport that they're competing within. And we cover a lot of things as far as the aspects of effectively moving properly because, you know, I always say the number one typical time saver on a course of fire is movement.
Right.
You know, most people think to have a faster time or a faster result, they need to shoot faster, and it's just complete opposite. If you're shooting, you can only shoot as fast as you can see, and I try to give them, you know, the knowledge and the power behind that so that way they can make the accurate shots needed and do all the other things effectively so there's no extra, what I call dead time, just extra movement, you know, or moving, whether you're moving or the gun's moving or through recoil or entering a position, whatever the case is, it all comes down to basically getting the gun to be where it needs to be at the right time so you can make an accurate shot.
Outstanding. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, I mean, you just can't pick that up. If you, either you have it or you don't. And if you need somebody who clearly does have it to at least open your eyes to those kinds of skills when you start to refine and get to the higher levels of shooting.
Got it. Yeah, I wish I had that, you know, coming up. My father helped me out a ton, but he and I both wanted to get professional training, and it just wasn't, we just, you know, we couldn't afford it back then. But I definitely recommend it, whether it's through me or some of the other top instructors, it's the way to go.
Outstanding. Talk about your other sponsors. I know Revision is taking a big role with you.
Yeah, you know, Revision's been a real good sponsor of mine. It's one of the things I'm, you know, really excited to be with them. The product is great. You know, obviously with my, you know, when I think of sponsors, and I go out there and look at sponsors without talking about a whole segment regarding sponsors. But, you know, I always try to find the right fit for me because I never want to be one of those guys that you see a Revision logo on me this year and then next you see a different logo. You know, I've been with them for 3 years now or 4 years now, and And for a reason. I specifically, you know, look for companies that have a great fit. They have a military background. I have a military background. You know, they called me up. This was probably 3 years ago, I guess. And they said, hey, you know, we're interested in meeting with you. Can you get on a plane tomorrow? And I'm like, yep, I'm there, you know. So
right.
I flew up and just the people there are amazing and the product and it's, you know, speaks for itself. I mean, they, you know, anytime you're shooting steel targets or, you know, and you only get two sets of eyes, period, you know, anytime you're trying to protect your eyesight, I'm always looking for the best ballistic eyewear out there. And to me, it's Revision, you know, hands down. They have the greatest product and they're just really, really great people. Young company, young people within the company, and they're just, they're go-getters. When you look up the definition of a go-getter in the book, it's them.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Outstanding, man. Well, I won't take up much more of your time, but I appreciate you being involved in the first ever official full-length episode of the Shooting USA podcast. And hopefully I can call on you again to be a part of it.
Yeah, definitely, John. Thanks for thinking of me, man, and I'm happy to be a part of the show anytime. It's an honor of mine to be on here with you, so thank you.
Outstanding, buddy. Well, good luck at your area match, and I will see you next week in Florida.
I'll see you there, man. Take care.
All right. Well, that's it. There you go. Max Michelle on the podcast today. So take it back through it. We got Jim Scouten on the podcast. We had Todd Jarrett on the podcast. We lucked up, and out of the blue, we got Chris Fleming on the podcast and wrapped up the hour with Max Michelle, one of the busiest guys in the practical shooting sports. So that's it. We've made it to an hour. That's pretty impressive. Who'd have known I could have done all that, filled an hour. That's pretty cool. Anyway, I'm going to find some music to get us out the back door, and I will see you guys soon. Here's Queen.